enterprising in my surroundings. I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing. Amazed that the focus remains the focal point of my change.
Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. This episode is brought to you by Ragnar Relay Races. This is something that I've wanted to do for a long time, so getting them to support the show is huge. So every adventure is better together, and Ragnar proves it with their road and trail races, which are all run in relay style. So there's over 40 races across the nation. They have road races and trail races. The road races are like a 200-mile running race, basically, 200-ish. Each one is a little bit different. And the trail races are a little different. So the trail races are basically you set up camp and it's about 120 miles-ish, but all of them involve 8 to 12 people. So if you're intimidated by some of these distances, don't be, because you got a lot of friends with you. It's one of those fun, adventurous vacations that it's one of those vacations where you're going to want a vacation from your vacation, frankly, because these are challenging, but that's why you want to do it. And also, it's so much fun. It's a great bonding experience. And every time I see people doing these, I get insanely jealous. So Ragnar is for everybody, every fitness level and any running experience level. It really is just a tremendous organization who's doing great things. And you can get $80 off your Ragnar Road or Trail Race using promo code RAMBLING19. That's RAMBLING19. Just go to runragnar.com. That's RUNRAGNAR.com. So in this episode, I'm interviewing somebody who I just found to be so captivating, not only in our interview, but also in his running or writing, I should say, for Tempo Journal, which he writes about his running and recently wrote about how he has dealt with a string of injuries in recent years and continues to actually battle injuries. But in so doing, has also reached new PRs and really talks about not only in that piece, but also in this episode, how he has battled injuries, how he has improved his mindset and mental game in order to capitalize on those periods where he has been healthy, and what he's hoping to do in the future to capitalize on all of that. Also, and we don't touch on this in the episode, Tim Rossi is a community manager for Nike based out of New York, which while we don't talk about in this episode, I do find fascinating. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned it in the intro. So with all of that being said, here is my episode with Tim Rossi. Hello, Tim, and welcome to the Rambling Runner podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure, Tim. I've been a fan of yours for a while, so I'm excited to get you on the show.
Yeah, looking forward to talking. This is my first podcasting experience, so it's going to be fun. You're helping me out, so it'll be good.
I'm excited, but you're no novice when it comes to the communication world. So you're writing continuously as a columnist for Tempo Journal, which I think is just it's really is a wonderful place, not only from a writer's point of view and seeing you and other people write so well about running and the people within running, but the visuals of Tempo Journal is really astounding. How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, so that's actually a hilarious conversation. Essentially, this was back when the original Vaporfly came out. I think I was one of the only people that was like running in them a lot. So one of the guys who runs Tempo Journal, this guy Riley out in Australia, actually DM'd me because they were doing a piece on like people who have written all over their Vaporflies. And he hit me up and he was like, hey, can we get a photo of your shoes? And I'm like, yeah, sure. This is kind of weird, but I'll do it. That's completely fine. And from there, essentially, we just like had a conversation. Riley liked my perspective on running and he asked me to start doing some writing for them. And that's just continued. I was joking with someone yesterday. Every time I put a piece out, I very much expect it not to do well and Riley not to want me to write anymore. And then he always hits me back up and wants me to continue doing stuff, which is absolutely awesome. Because I just get to like share my experiences about running with them, which is absolutely amazing. And it's a super fun thing as well. I like writing. I was never really good at it as a kid, but I really enjoy being able to use that as kind of an outlet, and being able to talk about my running with them has just given me a really awesome platform to be able to share my experiences.
And what was it like for you when he told you that basically expressing your own running is something that, you know, a wider audience would be interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, and I'm sure we're going to dive into it, but I think that running is very unique because everyone has their own like individual experiences, but there's a lot of common threads that whether you're the best runner in the world all the way back to like someone trying to do their first 5K, everyone experiences it in a very similar way. And those common threads kind of bring things together. And I don't think I realized just that like common thread experience initially. As I started getting more involved in the running community, I kind of started to realize it, but it's something that Tempo Journal and my writing for them has really like opened my eyes to. And it, I mean, it's amazing every single time I write one of these pieces. Obviously, the most recent one I wrote about being hurt, which is not fun to write about, but I can't tell you the number of like messages I've gotten from people that I've never met in my entire life that are sharing their experiences with me. And I joke again all the time that like I'm really bad at handling people telling me about like ruptured Achilles or torn ACLs because I don't have good advice for that, unfortunately. But it's cool when they're reaching out and just being like, hey, what you talked about really resonated with me and this is my experience. It really connects people. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it more than anything is you can connect with someone. I can go anywhere in the world and have these connections with people that maybe I've like seen on Instagram or seen on Twitter or just haven't even met before. And we will be extraordinarily close friends right away. But that's one of the beauties of running. You kind of hit the nail on the head. It's just common threads between everything.
Yeah, it's true. And it's almost from a broader perspective, a common thread with all sports. Right. Because yeah. You can find somebody who's like, hey, I'm into football, or if we're going international here, hey, I'm into cricket or whatever. It really is. It gives you a baseline to talk about something that isn't necessarily about you, but has, you know, broader applicability to so many other people.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And that's, I mean, you talked about it when you really zoom out, essentially, like anyone playing any sport, whether it's running, football, cricket, you're putting in work and you're trying to get better. That's kind of the point of everything, or just doing it for fun even. And that really kind of connects all sport generally and just makes like an amazing global community to exactly what you just said.
And one of the people who reached out to you after you wrote that most recent article was me. I loved it. And I was excited to get you on the show to talk about it because injuries in running, you know, affects us all to some degree. But you have been beset by injuries on a level that, you know, while not, you know, career ending or traumatic in that nature, is traumatic enough, or maybe that's not the right word, but basically persistent enough to affect you over a longer period of time and provide you the opportunity, which happens to so many of us, to play the, you know, why am I doing this game? So before we dive into, you know, the mental gymnastics around that question, when did running become something that was important to you?
No, yeah. And that's a can of worms question as well. But I've thought about this a lot, funnily enough. I think funnily is a word, whatever. But essentially, I grew up playing every other sport, as I think is pretty common with a lot of people who have come to running later in life. But I was competitive within soccer, football, and baseball. Baseball was probably my best sport growing up. I joke about when I started running, it was actually because I had gotten cut from the varsity basketball team. I'm like 5'8" and I can't jump. So I did not deserve to be playing basketball in any way. But I joined the indoor track team because there was a girl on the team that I had a crush on at the time. But I didn't start taking running more seriously until I would argue my sophomore year of college. When I got to college, I wasn't playing any of those sports competitively anymore. Still doing it for fun, but really needed something, one, to help me stay kind of fit. And that's why I started running. But then just started to take it more and more seriously. My freshman year of college, I went to Villanova University, which is down in Philly. And then I ended up transferring to Emory. But while I was at Villanova, I joined the club running team, again, just as kind of like a fun fitness outlet. But it was really eye-opening because there were all these kids on this team that were either redshirting from the varsity team or like had taken running super seriously in high school. And I was this kid who like grew up playing soccer and did not run and had no idea what I was doing. So they kind of showed me the ropes. And then over time, I just kind of got connected with a lot more runners. And then to actually answer your question, I think I started taking it more seriously, probably 2015, the fall of November 2014, I ran the first New York City Marathon, or my first New York City Marathon. My mom done it a bunch of times and I'd seen it happen. And I'd always just wanted to do that because New York kind of comes alive. I'm born and raised in New York as well. So it's a really amazing New York City experience. But I think with anyone that signs up for a marathon, you have this moment when you're like, oh, crap, I kind of got to train seriously at this point. So building into 2014 is probably when I started to take it more seriously. And when I would, as I refer to it now, when running became like a big piece of my life, essentially. Before that, it was really just like a hobby and for fun and after the marathon. But even leading into it, I kind of realized like, hey, I really enjoy this and I like taking it more seriously than I was before.
And when you were taking that next step in terms of your commitment to running and feeling like you were getting something out of it as well, what aspects of running really drew you in? Was it the competitiveness? Yeah. Was it something internal?
Yeah, so I think it's a few things. The competitive outlet was 100% part of it. I think when I first started running, I had a few different moments when I realized like, oh, I'm kind of good at this. One of them, I still talk about it all the time. It's probably my favorite race, but there's a turkey trot, which any of our American individuals out there know about, the Thanksgiving Day run. But I actually won a really small one, and it was not good. I joke again because it's a 3 and a 6 mile run, and it's essentially two loops of a 3 mile course. And I won the 3 mile, but there were two people running the 6 mile that were ahead of me when I crossed the finish line. So I didn't really win, but that was kind of eye-opening to like, oh, I'm kind of good at this, which made me want to get better. But then even beyond that, when I started taking it more seriously in the fall of 2014, that was after I'd graduated from college. And at the time, I was actually going to law school, which is a part of my life that I don't talk about all that much. But it was really cool.
That makes two of us, Tim. That makes two of us. I went for a semester and was like, oh, no. No, 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 this is not the path.
It's funny enough because that is literally what happened to me as well, where I went to Fordham Law for all of a semester and I realized probably 3 weeks in that like this is not my path and not what I want to be doing the rest of my life. So we're on the same page there, which is awesome. But then, I mean, you know it full well. Law school is like a stressful environment. There's a lot of competitiveness in courses. Everything is kind of set up just to stress you out, which is a little bit silly, but neither here nor there. But running when I was in law school, especially, was kind of like my break from everything. I got to go out. Fordham's campus is right near Central Park in New York. So I'd have like a break between my classes or a break after class before I was going to go to the library to study and like go out and run for an hour. And it was kind of awesome to have that mental escape. And it's absolutely something that brings me back to running all the time. Like that mental clarity, I think we all can relate to what it feels like to get out there and just go like hammer a 1 hour run or get out there and run further than you've ever ran before. There's something really fulfilling and mentally, it like helps with mental health a lot. That's something that tons of people have talked about, but it really just helps calm me down. And at the time when I started to take it seriously, that was probably like the biggest thing was, if I wasn't running, I didn't have any time throughout the day just to kind of be with myself and like clear my head, clear my thoughts, think about things, whatever it might be at the time. And that continues to be something enormous in my running. And one of the reasons that I want to be running every time that I get hurt, because I can't replace that as well with anything else, unfortunately.
Now, had you up to that point, you know, struggled with or dealt with the mental health side to any serious degree?
I would not argue to any serious degree just because I know that people are dealing with stuff way more serious than I was. But like even my freshman year of college, when I started running, like any high school kid, I had a girlfriend that I broke up with, and it was like the most devastating thing that's ever going to happen to an 18-year-old. But that was like really helpful for me, and running became something super helpful at that time, even when I was when I wasn't taking it seriously. Beyond that, I mean, like the other mental things that I would think through, especially deciding to leave law school, that was a pretty enormous decision and something that stressed me out pretty seriously. But it was really just like life stresses. There wasn't anything huge or like impactful moments in my life that I would consider, I'm putting air quotes around it, but serious, just again, because I know that people deal with way more serious stuff. And in my latest Tempo piece, I kind of wrote about it. The biggest like mental thing that I had to deal with for sure was my dad had a minor heart attack, he would say, though I would argue that no heart attack is minor. And I'd laugh at my dad when he says that now. But like that happened 2 days. He had quadruple bypass surgery 2 days before the New York City half marathon, which was something that I was signed up for. And like that was probably the biggest life stressor that I've ever had to deal with, where running played an enormous part in me being able to like just escape being stressed out about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up because I actually wanted to touch on that because that was such an interesting part of your article touching on that, because it seemed like going for that run after, you know, after learning about your dad and him going through what he needed to go through regarding that heart attack and the procedures afterward, you approaching that 10-mile run, and as I think you put it, like you hammered a 10-mile run, I think was the wording you used in that day, which is interesting because like you at this point you're not a novice when it comes to running, and you obviously were aware the day before a big race to then hammer a 10-mile run is not exactly what you'd want to do to prepare. But for you, obviously, running was serving a dual purpose at that point. So what was going through your head when you were deciding like, all right, you know, I wanted to go for a run here for my mental clarity, but I also have this other part of my life or other decision-making thing where it's like, hey, I want to run really well tomorrow. So what were some of the things that you were weighing in that moment? Because it seems like there's you know a lot was going on with you.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because that's unfortunately been a common thread with the New York City half for me. I've actually done that a few times where I've had like emotional stuff. My dad having a heart attack being way more serious than the other like emotional stuff that I've had to deal with before that race. So that irony is not lost on me that the New York City half seems to be associated with not so positive life events occurring for me. But yeah, I mean, your point is it kind of hits the nail on the head. I absolutely realize that like going out and running 10 miles way too hard is not the intelligent thing to do before a race. But with that said, I mean, like I kind of think of things as like levels of priority a lot of the time. And sometimes I in no way intended to like go out and hammer those runs the way that I did, but specifically with my dad having the surgery that day and then like finding out that surgery had went well, there's something about just like getting out there where if you want, I like to talk about my favorite type of run is that run where you're running hard enough where you have to very much focus on the effort that you're putting in, but not maybe so hard where like you're dying. I almost think about it as like marathon pace, so to speak, but that is kind of like my favorite thing to be able to do because running continues to be this escape for me where I can just like, for whatever amount of time it is, get outside and kind of get away from whatever has been stressing me out throughout the day. Maybe whatever's going on, maybe my dad being in the hospital, having a very serious heart procedure done. And like knowing that it's not necessarily good for the race itself, but knowing that like it's going to put me in a much better mind space for the race. And the race after my dad had the procedure is a great example where like I remember very vividly thinking throughout the race, like, well, my dad just had quadruple bypass surgery, like whatever my legs are feeling right now is not nearly as bad as what he's going through, and I would feel really bad if I like gave up during this race because he's gone through something very serious in his life and he absolutely has not given up on it. Me and my dad have a funny running connection as well, just because when I was getting ready, going back to the 2014 New York City Marathon, he's not a fit individual at this point in his life. But when he was a kid, he ran the New York City Marathon. I think he ran like 303, 302, and he didn't shut up about it or my entire childhood. He just bragged about it all the time. So there was a very big joke going on that if I didn't beat his time, like I knew I wasn't going to hear the end of it. My mom knew she wasn't going to hear the end of it. My sister knew we weren't going to hear the end of it. So there was a lot of a lot of joking pressure on me at that point, but it's always been like a nice connection point between us. And weighing it, like going out and just running hard and being able to get away, was way more important than like me actually tapering for a race at that point for me. And that was just like, I knew it was dumb. I especially knew it was dumb in the moment, but it helped me feel more prepared the next day than if I had jogged 2 miles, 3 miles, and like gone in extraordinarily stressed out. Still, I knew that wasn't going to be good for my head.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So when was the first, and what was the first major injury that kind of waylaid your running progress?
Yeah. So it happened, it was the winter of 2016. Essentially, I hadn't been injured at all within running leading up to that point, which like I'm knocking on wood as I say that, though I'm already hurt, so I probably don't need to do that. But I essentially thought I was like invincible. I'd obviously read about like all these guys who are out there running 120, 130 miles a week. I wasn't doing that, I should say, but I was running significantly more than I had before. I think my weekly mileage had got up like really high at that point. I was in the 90s at a point. And I had a stress fracture, which I was unaware of. In hindsight, I probably should have known about it, but it was in my right foot. It ultimately, I found out, was in the second metatarsal. But when it kind of reared its head, there's an indoor track called the Ocean Breeze Track and Field Facility in New York. It's out in Staten Island. But me and a few buddies of mine, Jeremy Mulvey and Luke McCambly, who will ultimately listen to this and laugh at this story, but we would go out there, and it was super low key, but they had like every other Thursday, a mile and a 2 mile that they'd run at the facility. So we ran the mile, and I actually felt pretty good during that. So we all decided to run the 2 mile. And I very vividly remember, with about 800 meters to go in the race, I just like felt something go in my foot and finished the race. The ongoing joke, and why Jeremy will laugh about it, is I ended up out kicking Jeremy in that race on a broken foot. So that's my claim to fame, which unfortunately also comes up with my second injury. But I beat Jeremy, and then I couldn't cool down. And I have like a very high pain tolerance. So whenever something hurts that much, I kind of know something's going on. Again, this was my first real injury. So I kind of knew something was going on, but didn't know just how serious it was. Funnily enough, I actually got an x-ray. I went to urgent care the next day, and they took an x-ray. And my doctor friends have since told me that sometimes bone fractures don't come up on x-rays immediately. So the x-ray actually came back clean. So I waited a week, and I still couldn't walk. My job also has me on my feet a lot, or my job at the time, I should say. So was limping around, everyone kind of making fun of me. And then finally went back and got another x-ray, and it was actually a full fracture at that point. So the stress fracture had gotten worse, fully fractured it. They put me in a boot for 8 weeks, which absolutely sucked. And then came back from that, which was great. But that's also why I get mad at my friends who like think they have a stress fracture, but keep on running on it. It can get significantly worse, as mine did. So please don't do that if you're someone with a stress fracture out there. But yeah, that was my first like real injury within running, which, again, I already said it, but absolutely sucked.
So you're in a boot for 8 weeks. What was the PT like, and what was the timeline like once you'd, you know, finished up with that 8 week segment?
Yeah, so that, I mean, this is unfortunately going to lead into the second injury, but in a boot for 8 weeks, and anyone that's been in a boot before, you kind of know that you lose all mobility in your ankle, and then your bones get really weak as well. So I came out of the boot and honestly kind of expected to be able to just like run immediately, which was not true, unfortunately. I actually overdid it one day and was like positive that I'd rebroken my foot. And I saw a doctor, and he told me I was being an idiot. And that's just kind of like how it feels. But it was a slow build up back to running. I started every other day, the like run walk routine and all that, a lot of PT for ankle mobility again. And then the second injury, though, so this, I would argue that it didn't have to do with the first injury, but it might have. Essentially, like 3 or 4 months after I'd gotten out of the boot, there's a group in New York City called the Orchard Street Runners, and they put on a race called the Midnight Half. So I was actually running the midnight half with one of my friends because I wasn't fit by any means at this point. Leanne Sherrick, who actually I know has been mentioned on this podcast a bunch of times. But essentially, we were running together. And again, around 11 miles into the midnight half, which is generally more than 13 miles, I stood on a rock with my other foot and rolled my ankle really, really badly. Ran it off. The adrenaline kind of like kicked in and felt better. But I ended up fracturing the fifth metatarsal in my left foot with what's called an avulsion fracture, which is like the ligaments fired super hard when I rolled my ankle, and where the ligament attached to the fifth metatarsal, it actually ended up fracturing that metatarsal as well. So I was not in a boot for that one, which was nice. And that one was a little bit of a quicker recovery. It was about 6 weeks of nothing. And then I could get on the stationary bike. I could get on the elliptical. All that stuff. But that one was way easier to come back to from just because I hadn't been in the boot and my mobility kind of remained there. I could still do strength work. I could still do all the stuff I wanted to do. But yeah, two really quick back-to-back foot fractures for me, unfortunately.
Oh, that is the worst. Because you also have this fear. It's like you hear about people who have foot injuries and then they can just persist over time because obviously it's like, you know, especially for a runner, you know, it's not as if you can just avoid that part of your body, and, you know, and just, you know, and keep on going. So you really have to obviously take care of it. And it's one of those things too, like you mentioned, like, shoot, like, what are the chances that you're going to like turn your ankle on a rock? And then of all things, it's your foot that you break as opposed to your ankle and blah, blah, blah. Like, right. It's like, there's so many different ways to get hurt. And there's so many different ways where like one injury can lead to the next. So when you were going through these now, like, you know, consecutive foot injuries and all of the PT related to that, what were some of the things that you were weighing in terms of like, all right, is running something that I want to continue to like work back to versus like, all right, am I just going to like go through this PT and like now that I'm not running, I'm just kind of used to not running?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's something that I don't think goes away either. Unfortunately, those questions come back every single time. But like, it's so interesting just because at this point or at that point in my life when those two back-to-back injuries had happened, a lot of my life kind of revolved around running, so to speak. I run with a team in New York. Like, all of my friends are friends that I've met through running, which I think is a very powerful thing within running. But that simultaneously makes getting hurt that much worse, because instead of going for runs with your friends, which is when I spend a lot of time with my friends, all of a sudden you like feel disconnected. You don't feel like you're a runner again, all that stuff. I mean, and it absolutely sucks. And those two times, especially because they were the first two times that I'd like worked back from things, and especially the second foot injury, because I had done so much work to come back. And then all of a sudden my body's failing on me again. I think the questions of like, is this actually for me, really reared their head even more. You hear a lot about like people that just can't handle running too much because their bones are weak. And after the second injury, I actually did a bunch of bone density scans. I like made sure that I was actually eating some sort of dairy product in my diet and all that stuff to make sure that I didn't simply have like soft bones. But it just like gets super, super frustrating. And especially at the start, it really, really sucks. But I think something that brought me back more than anything was, especially after the first foot injury, I think I was really determined to like, this is just a minor setback. And that's something that I wanted to come back to more than anything. I know way too many people, exactly what you said, where the questions come up of like, you get hurt over and over again. And then at some point, it just gets too frustrating. You walk away from the sport. And something that I'm extraordinarily passionate about is just knowing how much running has changed my life individually. If I can help keep people connected to the sport, keep people doing whatever it is within running, where they just continue to enjoy it, because I think it's something so powerful, that helps me want to keep coming back for sure. And that's something with the injuries as well, where like, there's a 2 to 3 week period where you just kind of sulk around and get really upset about it. And then after that, usually there's a switch that flips in my head where it's like, hey, people are going through stuff that's way worse than I am. If I can like show that you can kind of come back from this stuff, then hopefully someone who's dealing with something way worse than I was or I am will hopefully be motivated by it in a certain way. But then I also just always kind of come back to, like, I don't want running to be one of these things that, like, I did for a few years and then I don't do it anymore, because I still think there's so much for me to do within the sport, that the injuries, while they suck, being able to come back from it is that much more powerful. And it truly does kind of create this appreciation for the sport. When I hadn't been hurt, I remember just kind of taking it for granted. And sometimes you, like, get out of bed and don't want to go for a run. Everyone has that feeling. But after being hurt, it just puts perspective on it way more. And then the other, like, blessing in disguise with fractures of your bones is at least there's kind of a definitive timeline on it. And that's something that I'm dealing with even more right now, because, like, the knee issue that I've been dealing with for about 3 months now, it's vague in a sense, but the foot fractures, there was like a hard, I'm going back to the doctor on this date. It should be healed by now if I'm doing everything correctly. And that kind of helps motivate me. I like knowing that I'm working towards something rather than just kind of like existing in a weird flux space.
Yeah, and you mentioned before that you had certain running goals that were part of the justification, you know, for you to continue running, because you had these things that you wanted to accomplish beyond just the social nature. Like you mentioned, like, a lot of your friends are in the running community and you met them through running, so there's this social tie as well. So what were some of the goals that have meant a lot to you in your running career over the past, you know, say 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think that this actually ties really well into kind of what I'm going through now. But essentially, before I'd gotten hurt, I ran 2 marathons. I ran New York the first year. I ran 2:49. So I beat my dad's time, which was amazing. Felt great. That was the year that a hurricane had rolled through the day before, and it was like 50 mile per hour gusts of wind. So I kind of knew that there was something there a little bit more. So the next year I went into New York trying to break 2:40, and this was my second marathon. Like I said, the first year it kind of went swimmingly. I didn't hit the wall. I didn't blow up or anything like that. So the second year I ran it, was trying to break 2:40 and essentially exploded pretty badly. I went through the half in about 1:18, which in hindsight was way too fast. And then ended up running 2:46, but was still kind of a really cool moment, because with the marathon, there's so many little things that can go wrong. And I mean, the easiest example, I remember running off of the Verrazano Bridge, and there's a big downhill mile for the second mile. And that second marathon, I ran something like a 5:45 for the second mile, and knew at that point, like, Tim, you're an idiot. That was a stupid thing to do. So yeah, exactly. But I like kind of knew my fitness was beyond that. So then I had those 2 bone fractures. I actually ran the Boston Marathon, which was like the worst race experience I'd ever had, because I had a really inconsistent training cycle with it because of coming back from injuries and such. And I ultimately found out that I had a stress reaction in my shin when I was training for it. So 3 bone injuries right there. Sweet. But the Boston Marathon, I remember I ran the first 5K, and again, went out at 2:40 pace, which I should not have. And like 5K into that race, I wanted to drop out of the race. And this is funny. I'm good buddies with Chris Chavez, and I listened to his podcast with you. But he was joking about in Tokyo how, like, he didn't know where he was, and if he wanted to drop out, he didn't know how to do it. That is how I described my Boston Marathon experience, where, like, I knew full well that I'm running 26.2 miles into Boston. If I drop out, I still have to go the rest of the distance to go to the finish line. And I had no idea how to drop out of a race. So I was just like, oh, whatever, I have to finish at this point. So finished that race, sucked so much, but it like lit a fire in me again, where I knew like my training had been bad, but I really, really felt like I was a better runner than my results had displayed at that point. So took a big step back after the shin injury and took like 1.5 years to just train with no serious races in between. And then last year at the New York City Marathon, so to actually answer your question, finally, really wanted to break 2:40. I knew breaking 2:40 was there. And I threw out the goal that I was going to try and break 2:30 in the New York City Marathon last year, which I cannot tell you the number of people that told me I was being an idiot, which I think is hilarious because I'd seen my training for the last year and a half and knew that I'd really kind of reached another level of fitness. But at the time, I was a 2:46 marathoner, so you can't like blame everyone that's telling me like this kid's trying to cut 15 minutes off his marathon, 17 minutes. He's being an idiot. But last year, New York City Marathon, absolutely amazing experience. But I ran 2:31, so I missed my goal by a little bit. But with that said, like I truly went for it and I didn't explode. The last 3 miles is when I gave all that time back. But that kind of showed me that I have more to give within the sport and that like my potential is massively untapped, so to speak. And even just from that race, I kind of know after the race, my training continued to go super well. And I was running times and workouts that I've never ran before and just really making steady improvement and like really improving year over year, month after month. And that's something that truly motivates me because I think the like cliche of trying to figure out how much potential you have within something, that's kind of something beautiful within running that I come back to a lot of the time. And really just like trying to reach this pinnacle version of myself and knowing that there's still more there ideally. And I think this is what every runner does. They always think that there's something more to give, something to get better at. And it's just fun because you put in a lot of work and you get better. It makes it super, super enjoyable. But that New York City Marathon experience last year, so 2018, was truly that experience that I come back to where I worked through three different injuries. I was patient. I was intelligent with my training. And then finally like ran a race that I think kind of displayed the fitness that I had at the time. And that's something that makes me want to come back again because I've done it before and I know that I can work through it. It just takes way more time than I would like it to, unfortunately. But that race experience in and of itself is probably what I would come back to every single time as something that helps get me out the door, even when I can't run.
And you've talked, I shouldn't say talked, you've written about how you view yourself as someone who isn't a talented runner, so to speak. And you just brought up talent again, you know, the age old question of like, how much talent do I have in this? Another way of saying like, what is my ceiling? If I train really well, what am I capable of doing? So on and so forth. So what do you think running talent is and what do you think running talent isn't?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. I think there's certain individuals that just take to the sport immediately, and that's probably what I would view talent as. I also think talent is being able to handle the amount of training that it takes to be good at running a lot of the time. There's certain individuals. I'm really good friends with this guy, David Kilgore, out in New York City, one of my favorite individuals on like a real life basis. But then also just this runner that like I've watched David do like, I mean, he ran back-to-back marathons in Brazil recently for his job. But even beyond that, he'll like go and run an ultra and then a few days later, like be out there hammering with his friends all over again. And that's a guy that I look at who is just like the most durable individual in the world. And I think has a ton of talent within running just because of that. He can kind of do whatever he wants to his body and his body's going to bounce back amazingly. I also realize that there's talent like physiologically, certain people have like higher VO2 maxes and have lower rest and heart rates just naturally, or are built like a runner as well. That like lanky figure that everyone kind of imagines. There's certain people that just have like biomechanically they're set up to run really well. I also think, and this is kind of like not cheating, but I think that running's really cool because you look at the amount of work that you put in and it very tangibly leads to a result. And it's kind of this like idealized version of how I would like to view the world. I would like everything to be super fair. So if you like put in the work for something, you're going to get a result, whether that be at work, whether that be in a relationship, anything like that. That's obviously not how the world works necessarily, but running is awesome because of that. And I think to get back to the like not talented side of things, I didn't take to running when I first started. I wasn't like all of a sudden running super, super fast times. I remember the first time that I broke like 20 minutes in the 5K was spectacular. Even when I got good at running, I remember banging my head against the wall for literally the whole year of like 2015. This was trying to break 35 minutes in the 5K, and I just couldn't do it. And then this past year at the New York City Marathon, the first 10K split that I had was under 35 minutes. So just looking at the work that went in and how much more work I was able to put in to reach this ability level that I have right now, I think that's part of like, I don't want to view myself as a talented runner because I don't want to think that my talent's going to be able to like lead to good results. I want the work that I'm able to put in to be what leads to those results. And while I might naturally have some talent for running, whether it be the soccer background, I do think that running's one of these sports where talent has a little bit less to do with it, especially on an amateur level. When you get to like the top of the sport, the genetic pieces are going to play enough of a role where like everyone's training at such a high level. But I don't think, I talk about it with my friends all the time, I think that if anyone wants to get good at running, they very legitimately can get good at running. It's just hard to have enough time to be able to do it is a hard thing.
Yeah, and actually my coach takes a very similar approach. I'm coached by James McCurdy, who basically has told me many times, and I think I've shared this on the podcast as well, he goes, for the vast majority of people, unless they have certain physical characteristics that make it impossible for them to get to this level, because for the overwhelming majority of people, getting a Boston qualifying time is not something that they're not physically capable of doing. It's about whether or not they can put in the training to get there. And I remember laughing at the time he told me this. I'm like, that would mean I can run a sub-3-hour marathon, dude. Like, I can't do that. He goes, you absolutely can. He goes, I don't know if you will or not. He goes, that's a completely different story. He goes, but physically you can. I think it really ties into what you just said. And, in terms of, in a lot of other things that you mentioned too, was that you basically intimated how talent is a term that has a lot of, factors into it. Like there's a lot of things that can play into what running talent is. And one of those things, it can be a relative term as well. For a lot of people, they view someone as talented, and that same person might look up to other people. So I'm not talented, they're talented. And then like up and up the ladder you go. So when you think about your own physical characteristics, whether it's, like you mentioned, like your genetic like makeup, your VO2 max, durability, quick to success, and the other things that you mentioned, what do you think, if any of them, would be the one or two that really kind of fits into your running talent, as it were? Because obviously you have certain talents because, hey, you just ran 2:31 marathon. You've been running sub-3-hour marathons for a while now, even with these injuries. So there's obviously something there.
Yeah. I mean, and I think this is going to get into a vague area of talent, but I should also say that, like, I think you just hit the nail on the head with everything. I also think, everyone might have there's certain physical characteristics that obviously prevent people from being able to run at a high level. And that lack of talent, I'm putting it in air quotes, but like those are very real things and ignoring those is stupid. But exactly what you said, I also think that not having enough time is also a very real thing with myself. Like I work full time and that's essentially like the biggest other life factor that I have in my life right now. But I know other people have families, other people have like jobs that are more of a commitment than I have. And that's something really, really hard to find the time a lot of the time. So it's very much easier said than done. But to actually answer your question, and I'm going to take it two ways. I think one thing from like a talent perspective that I have or that I've realized over time is just, and this is where I mean taking it kind of vague, but I think I have a really good like mental capacity to one, just suffer over time. And that's like a really bad way of putting it. But I think something that's awesome with the marathon is it doesn't feel good whether you're running 6 hours for the marathon, whether you're running 4 hours for the marathon, whether you're me running 2:31, whether you're Eliud Kipchoge running damn near 2 flat in the marathon. Everyone kind of hurts in it, and being able to like ride that line for a really long time is something that I think I'm really good at. On the flip side of it, I think the lack of talent that I refer to a lot is I just don't think I'm a durable individual. Even training for New York last year, I think I said it before, but when I first got hurt, I was running like 90 miles a week and my body obviously fell apart when that was happening. For New York last year, I took a what would be considered a novel approach where I extended my training program. I wrote myself a 20-week build up for the marathon, but I was only running 50 to 60 miles at the time, which is a lot for some people, but for where I was coming from, it was truly a step back. But that's what I needed to do to stay healthy, was a huge thing for me just to be able to make it to the starting line. And then even beyond those two things, I think the other thing that I'm good at is just having grown up playing other sports. I think I have an athletic background that does truly help me in running. I don't have the built up mileage that people that have ran since middle school, high school have. But because like playing soccer helped me move laterally a little bit more, I like to think, and again, I'm putting air quotes around it, but I have a little bit more of an athletic background where maybe I can do certain things in certain workouts that other people would not be able to do that have just been running their entire lives.
All right. So two more questions for you before we get going. Yeah. First one is, you know, you've talked at length about the mental, physical, and emotional consequences that come from being injured while running and trying to recuperate as well. So you're going through an IT band issue now that's coming up on almost 3 months that you've been dealing with it. So what are some of the things that you've learned how to approach these injuries so that you can try to maximize your mental, physical, and emotional well-being while dealing with it?
I think, one, I still struggle with it for sure, and it's not something that ever gets so much easier, and it's been something I've, like, when people have reached out to me more recently, it's something that I bring up, but I even think that that's something helpful. Just knowing that it's not going to be fun is enormous. Like, I know that being injured sucks at this point, and knowing that like I'm able to predict I'm not going to be as excited all of the time, so to speak, or as like happy walking around. There's going to be moments where things absolutely suck, and like riding those lows, it's something that one of my friends gave me the analogy of waves. I think is the biggest analogy in the world, because it's going to keep coming and you kind of have to choose whether to ride the waves and like go through those low points, go through those high points, or you can just let the waves completely control you. So taking that approach and knowing that it's not going to be fun is huge. The other huge thing that I've tried to do this time, and I kind of teed it up before, but like a lot of my life revolves around running, where a lot of my friends are people that I run with. A lot of the work that I do is within running as well. And not detaching myself from that has been a huge step forward this time, where the first time I got injured, I like wanted to be in a shell. I didn't want to interact with people, especially people that run all the time, because it just like disappointed me when I would be sitting with them and they're like talking about race results that they had, or going to cheer for races where I was supposed to be running used to be something extraordinarily depressing to go to, essentially. But something that I've tried to do this time is stay connected to all of those people. I mean, this past weekend, I was up at the Boilermaker 15K in upstate New York, out there on the sideline with a megaphone, probably annoying everyone, but having like a great time. And years, like the past three injuries that I had, that would not have been what I would have been doing. And that's helped me a lot. Like one of the Luke McCambly, again, is someone that I talked about before, is a good friend of mine. He's the orange runner on Instagram. He does a lot of drawing. But he, when I broke my foot the first time, sent me a text that was like, dude, like, just because you're hurt doesn't mean we're not going to be friends with you. And as silly as that sounds to like a normal individual, when you're hurt and like in this headspace where everything seems to be collapsing around you, something that obvious had like a profound impact on me, where I realized the rest of my life, people aren't just friends with me because I run or because I'm good at running. It's because we actually are friends. I've just met you through this. So staying connected has been probably the biggest thing, or just investing in things that you have going on outside of running is a huge thing as well, where I've dove into work a little bit more. I've done some work with various things that I have on the side, that I have a little bit more time to do now that I'm not running as much. And that has really, really helped me kind of feel like I'm still progressing forward, even though I'm very tangibly not getting better at running right now.
Yeah, it's that thought that your buddy sent you is huge, not only because, you know, it is kind of, it is nice to know that you're in a good spot with your friends. And that's always an important thing, especially when you're in a headspace that's not great. And I use the wave mentality. I use the wave comparison a lot when I'm going through similar down periods. But it's also, and for me, this sort of thing is even more impactful, is just seeing the proactivity of my friend to reach out in the first place to say it. Even means more than the words themselves. Like, oh man, you were thinking about me like that. You were thinking about what I was thinking about or what was going through my head. And the fact that you went through that kind of mental game, like, you know, means a lot. And that can really, you know, so if you know someone who's going through injuries, just little words like that, it might seem like, well, duh, dude, of course we're still going to be friends. Like that kind of proactive foresight can really just like turn the tables for somebody in a way that might be hard to see from the outside looking in.
100%. And that's even something, to your point, it's something that I try and do better now. And I mean, even to like in general, sometimes people don't want to hear it. And there's times that like friends have reached out to me when I'm like at a low point and I won't respond to them. But that doesn't mean that it's not having like a good impact on my mental health within being disconnected from my buddies. And now when I have friends that are going through whatever it might be, whether it be injuries, whether it just be other stuff that's taking them away from running, it's something that I've learned from myself. And I proactively try and do where it's like, hey, if once every 2 weeks, I'm going to send someone a message just like, hey, you want to grab coffee or a beer sometime, even if they say no, knowing exactly what you said, that like, you're still keeping them front of mind, I think it has a profound impact on people's abilities to kind of come back and not feel like they've lost everything when something like this gets taken away from them.
Absolutely. All right. Last one. We were talking a lot about connections and community. So talk about the Lost Boys. It's not really a question. It's not a question at all, in fact, but just talk about the Lost Boys, because it is a great group that you have, you know, been instrumental in putting together. And it just seems like such a fun group of people.
Yeah. And it's funny that it's taken me this long to mention the Lost Boys as well. People usually joke with me that I don't shut up about this. And I usually ramble about this, so sorry in advance. But essentially, I mean, this kind of started, it started as a joke, I should say first. New York City running is amazing, but a few years ago, it used to be a lot more like you ran with a group and you only hung out with that group, which I thought was super silly. And it's changed dramatically, which is awesome to see that happening as well, where everyone kind of intermingles, interacts with each other, and everyone's super, super welcoming now as well. There's no like team pride to the point where you can't hang out with another team. But essentially, I mean, I kind of touched on it. I grew up playing other sports. And one of the biggest things that I see happen within running, and this is a twofold thing, but one, I have a lot of friends now who like ran at a very, very high level in college or high school, whatever it might be, and got burnt out because they had just taken it seriously for such a long time in their life that being able to take a massive step away from it is what they needed, which is awesome. But I think a lot of us start running just for the pure fun of it. Like it's a very enjoyable thing to be doing. And then on the flip side as well, there's this weird, not gap, but there's certain things within running, and I can use myself as an example. Like I've Boston qualified now, which is huge. And I realize it's like a massive goal for a lot of people and is something very much worth chasing after because Boston is amazing. But there's like a weird gap after that where like even myself, I kind of want to qualify for the Olympic trials right now, but I'm a 231 guy. Like that's still pretty far off for me. So essentially, my whole opinion is you can take running seriously, but still have a lot of fun with it and not take yourself overly seriously. And that's essentially what the Lost Boys is supposed to be. Really just showing you that like, one, there's people out there chasing whatever dream it might be, whether it be BQing, whether it be breaking four in the marathon, or whether it be qualifying for the Olympic trials. There's people that want to take running seriously, but truly want to have fun doing it and want to continue to remind people about the fun side of the sport. So I talk about us a lot of the time. It's Lost Boys Track Club, but we're very much more of a philosophy towards the approach of the sport. A lot of the people that run with us run for different clubs officially and all that stuff. But it's just a really, really fun group that I think, and it has done it, which is why it continues to be a thing. But it resonates with people where I get messages sometimes that are like, dude, like, I didn't realize anyone was out there chasing this goal the way that you are. Like, I'm going to continue to try and do it. Or even some of the people that run with us now, David Kilgore, I talked about before. Mike Horowitz is another one who runs with us now. Are people that like ran at very prestigious colleges and ran very seriously, but then took a little bit of time away from it because it was too serious for them. And we've been able to hopefully show them that running can be fun again, and just bring them back into the sport. And it really is trying to do that. And I mean, it's been hilarious because it started as a joke, but it's allowed me to connect with people that I never would have connected with from the top level of the sport. I talk about Trevor Dunbar all the time as someone that like embodies a lost boy, where he's running professionally now, but there was a period of time where he didn't have a contract. He was thinking about walking away from the sport, but he just loves it and loves having fun with it. And that's truly what it's all about, is being able to really just like, no matter how ambitious you think your goals are, you could seriously get there. It's just hard to stay connected to it sometimes, and it does feel lonely at times as well. So if we're able to be a reminder for someone to come back and know that it's worth pursuing whatever it is you're trying to pursue, and to your point, you talked about it earlier, that can be outside of running. One of my favorite messages I ever got was some guy who wanted us to send him a hat because he was like a competitive rower in college, and now he was trying to row semi-professionally, but he didn't have anyone to take it seriously with. And he, like, the message of Lost Boys resonated with him, which I think is insane and really, really cool. And that's something that's just something I'm super passionate about, wanting people to have fun running, but not feel like they can't take it seriously if they want to take it seriously.
Absolutely. So how can somebody, if they're interested or want more information, how can they get in touch with you guys to be part of this group?
Yeah, for sure. So we have truly an Instagram account. It's kind of it right now, Lost Boys Track Club on Instagram. I will say there's a website that's unfortunately live, but is continuing to be edited. So apologies for anyone that's hit us up there. That is also live, and hopefully will be a thing within the next like month or so where people can actually get in touch with us. And then we're working on various things. I can't tell you how many disappointed people I've told where like, we don't have singlets available right now, but I promise I'm working on it. It's another side job in and of itself, trying to make that happen, but it will absolutely happen. You can also feel free to annoy me because I'm trying. It's the whole thing. But yeah. Hit us up on Instagram right now. Send me a DM that you want a singlet. And I'll tell you no, but that I'm working on it.
Got it. Can we get Rufio with the sword on the singlet? I mean, that's just preferably favorite Lost Boy. I don't know where you fall on the spectrum of Lost Boys, but he was always my favorite.
Oh yeah, I mean, we can have this debate ad nauseum about who's the best, but yeah, that's 100% what needs to happen. We need just various team singlets with various different Lost Boys on it is ultimately where we'll end up going for sure. But yeah, we're gonna make it happen.
That's awesome. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been such a fun conversation. I really appreciate it. And please continue all the good work you're doing at Tempo, because it's fun to read not only what your running career is like and what you're going through, but how it connects to the larger audience.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me. And I will continue to keep writing as long as Tempo continues to have me. But thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Tim, for coming on the Rambling Runner podcast. Also, big ups to our sponsors, Ragnar Relay Races, Tune Up CBD, and Megaton Coffee. As always, I only let people advertise on this podcast unless, or only if, I should say, I fully believe in their products and use them. So I love Ragnar Relay Races. I can't wait to do it. And I use Tune Up CBD and I drink Megaton Coffee. So go check them out as well, because I think that you will enjoy your experiences just like I have. Big shout out to Tim. I really appreciate him being on the show. Also, shout out to Road to the Olympic Trials podcast. On Monday, I had John Ranieri on the podcast, who was doing great work. And on Thursday, coming up, a frequent guest of the Rambling Runner podcast, will make her first show, or first episode, I should say, of Road to the Olympic Trials, and that is the one and only Sarah Bishop. If you love Sarah, you're going to want to listen to that episode, not only because we touch on old stuff, but some new stuff as well. So, with all that being said, thank you so much for listening to the show, and happy running. This has been a production of Rambling Runner Podcast. This podcast is produced by David Margetti of In Post Media. Thank you to Meta P for the music. His song, Righteous Path, featuring Rex Mayhem and Chip Fu, is produced by Symphonic Bang.
Yeah. Enterprising in my surroundings, I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing, amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change. I'm trying to show this industry.